What is private equity? Depending on how financially sophisticated you are, it might be one of those terms that just makes your eyes glaze over. But there's a case to be made that we should all know what it is because it's having an outsized and arguably negative impact on our jobs and our lives. Here to make that case is Brendan Belew, author of the new book, Plunder, Private Equity's Plan to Pillage America. Brendan is a federal prosecutor who's taken on private equity firms directly, and he joins us now to share five of his big ideas.
Hi, I'm Brendan Belew. I'm the author of Plunder, Private Equity's Plan to Pillage America. I'm a federal prosecutor, and I served as special counsel for private equity in the Antitrust Division of the Justice Department. Needless to say, I am speaking in my personal capacity. The first big idea of this book is that private equity surrounds you. If you rent an apartment, you might do so through a company that's owned by Blackstone. If you buy insurance, you might do so through Apollo. If you go to the doctor or you ride in an ambulance, you may ultimately be paying somebody that's employed by a KKR portfolio company. In fact, if you buy my book, private equity will be literally right in front of you. The font that we used for the book was licensed by a company that was owned by a private equity firm. In fact, if you considered them with their portfolio companies, depending on the year, the order might change, Blackstone, Carlyle, and KKR would be the third, fourth, and fifth largest employers in the United States, behind just Walmart and Amazon. And yet, so few people know what private equity is or what it does. And so it's worth just taking a moment to describe the business model. What private equity firms do is pretty simple. They take a little bit of their own money, some investor money, and a whole lot of borrowed money to buy up companies. They then try to make operational or financial changes with the aim of selling the company for profit a few years later. It's a really simple idea, but private equity firms have a few sort of structural flaws baked into our laws that ultimately lead to bad consequences. For instance, private equity firms typically own the businesses they buy only for a few years, and so that encourages a certain level of short-term thinking. They also tend to load the companies they buy up with a lot of debt, and they tend to extract a lot of fees. And then third, and this is the part that's sort of most interesting to me as a lawyer, is that private equity firms are really good at insulating themselves from legal liability. So if you sue a private equity portfolio company, it's often hard to recover money from the private equity firm itself. And so when you combine those three structural issues, short-term thinking, reliance on debt and fees, insulation from liability, it tends to lead to bad consequences. Bad consequences for employees, bad consequences for customers, bad consequences for the businesses themselves. A recent study showed that private equity firms had a bankruptcy rate for their portfolio companies of about 20%, whereas comparator companies went bankrupt at a rate of 2%, so about 10 times as often. All of which is to say that private equity surrounds you, and yet there are some basic challenges with the private equity business model that may be transforming your life, and not necessarily for the better. The second big idea is that private equity often succeeds not necessarily by being great at business, but by being great at the law. You know, when I started this project, I, like many people, sort of thought of private equity leaders as masters of the universe, for good or for ill. But when you look at their backgrounds, often they don't have, you know, experience in marketing or sales, engineering, logistics, you know, the foundations of building companies. Rather, their backgrounds, understandably, are financial ones. And so the changes that they try to make to businesses often are financial changes or really uses of the legal system for their own benefit. And I'll give you an example. So in the 2000s, the private equity firm Sun Capital bought up the diner chain Friendly's. And it executed a lot of tactics that are sort of familiar to observers of private equity, you know, extracting various fees and selling assets. Ultimately, they pushed the company into bankruptcy. And here's what's really interesting. You know, bankruptcy, and I hate to get in the weeds here, is a little bit like flipping an hourglass, where the people that were the owners tend to lose out, and the people that were the lenders tend to take control of the company. But Sun Capital had done this really interesting thing, where it wasn't just the owner of Friendly's, it was also the largest lender to Friendly's. And so they were, when flipping the hourglass, Sun Capital was able to sell Friendly's from itself to itself. Now, why would Friendly's, why would Sun Capital do that? It turns out by executing this maneuver, they were able to push off the pension obligations that Friendly's had onto what's called the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, which is this quasi-government agency that is paid for by other sort of more responsible pension holders. And so, you know, ultimately, Sun Capital was able to hold on to this asset, but free of the obligations that it had to Friendly's retirees. And I use that example to show that oftentimes private equity firms aren't really focused on, you know, changing the company for the long term better, you know, improving its operations, but rather using the machinery of the law to sort of get advantages for itself. That's not always what private equity does, but as I got further and further into this research project, it became increasingly clear that that's a real advantage that private equity brings to the table here. The third big idea is that private equity firms are really good at politics. Private equity firms have given hundreds of millions of dollars to federal elected officials and candidates over the past few decades. But more than the money, private equity firms have got people. They've employed former secretaries of state, treasury, defense, former senators, former chairs of the FCC and SEC, two former speakers of the House, a vice president, any number of generals, and a former CIA director, all of whom are working for private equity and helping to advance the industry's interests. You see the success of this strategy playing out in a whole bunch of different issues, one of the most common of which is called the carried interest loophole. We don't need to get into the details here, but the basic idea is there's a tax advantage that gives private equity executives the ability to pay a lower effective tax rate than ordinary teachers and firefighters and so forth. This has been an issue that every president since President Obama has tried to stop, tried to close, and none of them have been successful. In the most recent iteration, President Biden tried to close the carried interest loophole first through his budget proposal and then in the negotiations over what became the Inflation Reduction Act. But not only did private equity or the industry effectively manage to save the carried interest loophole, it actually got new loopholes in the process of these negotiations. So it's interesting that, you know, private equity isn't necessarily the best at running businesses, but it is enormously successful, perhaps more successful than any other industry, in protecting its preferences in the tax code and elsewhere that help it make money. The fourth big idea is that private equity firms are doing so much more than private equity. You know, after the Great Recession, so many of the big investment banks that you know about converted into what are called bank holding companies, which are much more highly regulated. And in a sense, private equity firms sort of took their place in terms of financial engineering. And so private equity firms often don't even call themselves that anymore. They refer to themselves as alternative asset managers and are doing so much more than the sort of leveraged buyouts that we consider when we're talking about, you know, private equity historically. For instance, private equity firms are now getting into the business of insurance, buying up life insurance companies and then using the money that policyholders pay every month or every quarter to invest in their own projects. The challenge that we've got here is that there's really interesting reporting suggesting that these private equity owners, some of them at least, are pushing the assets of these insurance companies to offshore affiliates in Bermuda that have lower capital requirements. And what this means is that the private equity firms have more money to play with and invest with, but less of a cushion if something goes wrong. Now, the reason that's concerning is that private equity firms own these insurance companies, but may not necessarily have to pay out if things go badly. Rather, what are called state guarantee corporations, which are funded by other more responsible insurers, will have to pay out the policies of an insolvent insurer. And so we have a situation where private equity firms may benefit if things go well, but essentially get to walk away if things go poorly. Now, that's far from the only area where private equity firms are expanding. In fact, the largest private equity firms are not just doing leveraged buyouts, but also getting into the work of hedge funds, infrastructure, and so much else. In fact, one of the most interesting areas that they're getting involved in is 401ks. Historically, 401k fund managers haven't invested in private equity, essentially for fear of getting sued. But that's starting to change, potentially. A letter issued by the government a few years ago essentially insulated fund managers from liability if they decide to invest in private equity. And the 401k world is many trillions of dollars. Private equity firms spent, I think, a little over $1 trillion buying companies last year. So by getting access to 401k funds, it'll essentially be able to supercharge their operations. It's just one area where what we think of as a private equity firm is, in fact, potentially about to do so much more. The fifth and final big idea is that private equity can be reformed. If we go back to what the basic problems with the private equity business model are, they're simple. Private equity firms tend to invest for the short term. They tend to load companies up with a lot of debt and extract a lot of fees, and they tend to be insulated from liability or from the consequences of their own actions. If you change those three things, if you get private equity firms to think for the long term, if you get them less reliant on debt and fees, if you get them to take responsibility for their own actions, private equity firms can be made a useful part of our economy. I always say, as long as businesses need to build new factories and hire new employees, there's an important role for our finance system to play. The challenge is, how do we get it to play responsibly? So how do we make these changes? There's a role for Congress to play here, which can, you know, essentially get private equity firms to think for the long term, get them less reliant on debt and fees and so forth, change the liability laws. But Congress isn't the only lever of power here. Federal regulators can play a role. The Securities and Exchange Commission, the Federal Reserve, the Treasury Department, all can do important things here. State and local regulators or legislators can do important work too by essentially banning certain extractive tactics that private equity firms engage in. One of the things that I've been most inspired by is watching activists working on specific issues and in specific industries where private equity firms are active. In the prison phone industry, for instance, activists have been extraordinarily successful at capping the rates of calls that private equity firms were raising to extremely high levels, making it essentially unaffordable for some prisoners to call their own families. In the healthcare industry, activists have been really effective at mandating rulemaking on minimum staffing requirements in nursing homes, another industry where private equity has been especially active. I bring up those examples to say that even though private equity is expanding in so many of these areas and, you know, sort of growing beyond the business of leveraged buyouts, even as private equity becomes, you know, as we mentioned earlier, the third, fourth, and fifth largest employers in the United States, there are ways that we can fix it. And so I encourage you, if you're interested in how do we make a better, fairer economy, look up organizations like Americans for Financial Reform, the Open Markets Institute, American Economic Liberties Project, or the Private Equity Stakeholders Project. All these groups are doing important work, and you might be excited to learn what they're doing.
Thank you, Brendan. That was Brendan Ballou with five big ideas from Plunder, Private Equity's Plan to Pillage America. You might also want to check out our book bite for 2 and 20, How the Masters of Private Equity Always Win by Sachin Kujuria. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.